Thank you, everyone who is supporting Into the Word by giving to the funds needed to pay for the radio broadcast fees. Anyone that would like to assist in that, it's very easy to do. Just get a pen and paper, write down the contact information at the end of today's program, and then you can send a one-time or ongoing gift of absolutely any amount to that address, and it will be earmarked for the radio fees. Thank you for taking care of that. Fridays, you know I'm in the habit of urging you to be very active in a local body of believers. Everyone needs a home church, and everyone needs to be in attendance and in association with the regular activities of that congregation. If you don't have a place where you're doing all of those things, you need to get out there and find it. And if by any chance you happen to be looking for a place right now, and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, I extend to you a very hearty invitation to come check us out. Maybe we'll be the place that you can call home. We are in Exodus chapter number 7, verse number 14. And we will begin today the 10 plagues of God against Egypt. Moses has appeared twice now, Moses and Aaron together, to Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh is more than likely Thutmose III. The year is the very late winter and early spring of 1456. I believe that is very accurate. We know that the final plague is going to be the very first Passover of Israeli history. And that will definitely take place in the spring of 1456. In fact, I can pin it down to Thursday the 14th of April of 1456. So probably in maybe late February, maybe during March, Moses appears to Pharaoh for the first couple of times. And the first one ends up with a bigger workload being given to the Israeli people in their making of bricks. And that makes the Israelis unhappy with Moses, and Moses is very upset that happened on his watch. The second meeting is the one at which Aaron throws down the power staff and it becomes a serpent as a sign of supernatural ability that God has when he demands that Pharaoh let the Israelis go. But we know that the sorcerers that work for the Egyptian court, apparently there's two of them, they're named later in the New Testament. They throw their sticks down. They become serpents, either by sleight of hand or by tapping into the demonic world. Aaron and Moses' staff as a serpent gobbles those two or more, depending on how many sorcerers there were, snakes up, then Aaron picks it back up as it becomes the staff again. But Pharaoh's heart was still hard. He refused to let the Israelis go. So it is now time for the gloves to come off. And God starts the count of 10. First plague. Exodus chapter 7, verse 14. Then he who is said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He refuses to let the people go. Go to the Pharaoh in the morning. So the snake thing happened on one day. The plague number one is going to happen the next day following. So go to Pharaoh in the morning as he is going out to the river. Apparently, just like Moses adopted Egyptian mother, the princess of Egypt, had a habit of perhaps bathing ritually in the shallow waters along the edge of the Nile. That is what Pharaoh does. It's probably a religious ritual, since they considered the Nile to be a divine thing. So Moses goes to that ceremony first thing in the morning, and he is told to do this: stand on the bank of the Nile to meet him, take in your hand the staff that turned into a serpent, and you shall say to him. Now remember, it will be Aaron saying this, but Moses is the one receiving the information from God and passing it to Aaron. You shall say to him, he who is. Now, of course, he uses the Hebrew Yahweh, which Pharaoh has already been unimpressed with. Who's this Yahweh character you keep talking about, right? I don't know Yahweh. So, he who is, the God of the Hebrews, sent me to you saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But so far, you have not obeyed. Thus says he who is, by this you shall know that I am he who is. Remember, Pharaoh had said, I don't know Yahweh. I don't know this he who is character. Well, God's response is, you will know me. You'll know exactly who I am. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn into blood. The fish in the Nile shall die, the Nile will stink, and the Egyptians will grow weary of drinking water from the Nile. So Aaron, on behalf of Moses, on behalf of he who is going to deliver this warning, and then he's going to whack the water, and the water will turn blood red. Now, does it actually turn into literal blood? I doubt that, but I'm open to that as a miracle. I don't believe that that's impossible for God, but I think it is more likely that what we're seeing here is making the water blood red with the overgrowth of this microscopic life in the water that basically kills the fish, because these plants apparently use up all the oxygen, or these protozoa use up all the available oxygen and kill off the fish and make it something that the Egyptians can't really drink unless they treat it. So that's the threat. That's the warning that is issued. Verse number 19. And he who is said to Moses, say to Aaron, take your staff, stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their rivers, their canals, their ponds, and all their pools of water, so that they may become blood, and there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, even in the vessels of wood and in the vessels of stone. So this plague is not just simply going to strike the water of the Nile. And by the way, it's going to affect this water apparently upstream as well. The capital city that they're dealing with is just below the delta, somewhere close to where downtown Cairo is today. And so this is where this threat is being delivered. And so you could understand immediately how all the water from there downstream into the delta region would suddenly be affected. But it seems as if it affects all the water to the south, upstream. Because once God gives the okay for Moses to stop the plague, it takes, I think, 7 days, about a week, for the water to run clear again. And so that's going to represent the time it takes for upstream to clear out as it passes by the capital city. So after striking the Nile, Aaron is supposed to kind of wave this serpent staff all around in the direction of all the other reservoirs of water in Egypt, including little bitty reservoirs like pots and glasses. And every bit of it that belongs to Egyptians is going to be immediately affected. Now, notice I emphasize that which belongs to Egyptians. Because even though it is not specified here in the text at this moment, it becomes clear in the text later that the Israelis are shielded from the impact of all 10 plagues. And Josephus makes a very big deal out of that when he is retelling the story in Antiquities book number 2, where he says this, "For the Egyptian river ran with bloody water at the command of God, inasmuch that it could not be drunk, and they had no other spring of water neither. For the water was not only the color of blood, but it brought upon those who ventured to drink it great pains and bitter torment." Such was the river to the Egyptians. But, listen to this, this is the Jewish tradition passed down generation after generation until it arrived at the first century, the time of our New Testament. "But it was sweet and fit for drinking to the Hebrews, and no way different from what it naturally used to be. As the king, therefore, knew not what to do in these surprising circumstances and was in fear for the Egyptians, he gave the Hebrews leave to go away. But when the plague ceased, he changed his mind again and would not suffer to let them go." So in telling the story, Josephus lets us know something that I think we can already see later in the narrative, that from plague 1 to plague 10, the Israelis were unaffected. They were shielded. And that, as I've taught for a long time, is likely to be the exact same case with the 7 wrath events in the book of Revelation. Those wrath events will be against those that have taken the mark of the beast and not against anyone else. And that is the way of God showing his selective judgment. Back to our text in Exodus. Exodus 7, verse 20. "Moses and Aaron did as he who is commanded. In the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, he lifted up the staff and struck the water in the Nile, and all the water in the Nile turned into blood. And the fish in the Nile died, and the Nile stank," as you might expect. The Nile River was full of life, full of fish. And then in an instant, all those fish died and floated to the surface and washed up on the shores. And it had to have been a huge stink. So that the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile. There was blood throughout the land of Egypt. But, and this is interesting, apparently the Pharaoh talks to his sorcerers again. "But the magicians of Egypt did the same by their secret arts." Now, we need to tweak that a little bit in our understanding. basically, the Egyptians got a hold of some unaffected water. Now, where in the world would that have come from? It would come from the Israeli area. And then, through their secret arts, they turn their little bit of water bloody looking, blood red. Now, they could have done that by sleight of hand. That's true. Or maybe, again, it's possible that supernatural demonic forces, satanic forces, could have given them the ability to actually do it. Regardless, their little demonstration was nothing compared to the nationwide demonstration given by Moses and Aaron. Theirs was piddling in comparison. But it was all that Pharaoh needed to keep going with his refusal. So the second half of verse 22, so Pharaoh's heart remained hardened, and he would not listen to them as he who is had said. So a second time we're told, Pharaoh hardened his own heart. So kind of keep track of that as we go through. Pharaoh turned, and he went into his house, and he did not take even this to heart. And all the Egyptians dug along the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink the water of the Nile. Now you remember that all the water had been affected, even the ones that were in containers in houses. So what happens, as we're told, is that they ordered brand new wells dug everywhere, up and down the Nile and throughout the Delta. And evidently, those brand new wells came in clear enough to drink. And so they were able to get through the bad time by this hard work of digging new wells. And it's more than likely that the Egyptians made some of the Israelis dig these new wells. And then the thing that I already mentioned, verse 25, 7 full days passed after he who is had struck the Nile. And so it takes about a week for the waters in the Nile to completely clear. Chapter 8. We're ready for number 2. Then he who is said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and say to him, thus says he who is, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all your country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs that come up into your house, into your bedroom, on your bed, into the houses of your servants and your people, into your ovens and your kneading bowls. The frogs shall come up on you and on your people and on all your servants. So the second plague is also against the Nile. The first plague turned the Nile blood red and killed off the fish. It's going to take a long time for the fish population to get back where it used to be. The second plague is going to be against the Nile, but it is going to spawn a monster generation of frogs. Now, they have frogs, but they have a bigger issue that this plague is going to impact on, and that is they have a goddess that is represented by frogs. She's the goddess of health and healing and things of that nature. So in the plagues, each of the plagues attacks not just a geographical region or element, it also shows that the gods can do nothing for Egypt. So the Nile can't protect itself from Yahweh. And Hecate, who is this frog goddess, cannot protect herself against he who is of the Hebrews. All right, so let's see how this progresses. Verse 5, and he who is said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools, make frogs come up on the land of Egypt. So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. So here we go again with the wrath of God coming in the form of a plague of frogs. Now, frogs are not scary for most people. We ate frog legs when I was a kid. We played with frogs. We caught them. We fiddled around with the tadpoles and all of that stuff. So we were never scared by frogs. But then again, we never had like thousands upon thousands of frogs suddenly showing up at our house and getting into the house and getting into the oven and into the cabinets and the food hamper, the food pantry, and just being everywhere. It would have been scary. And what does Pharaoh do? He immediately does what he's done twice before. Well, let's see whether or not my guys can do something like that. Verse 7, but the magicians did the same by their secret arts and made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. Now, again, I do not know how they accomplished this test. A possibility is that they went just a little ways away into Goshen to perform their test, because there wouldn't have been frogs in Goshen, because that's where the Israelis are. Or perhaps they set up some sort of enclosure along the edge of the Nile and made sure that all the existing frogs were taken out of that enclosure and then performed their little sleight of hand. Or more likely, at this point, I'm guessing, their demonic-inspired miracle. But they managed to do it enough that Pharaoh believed that what Moses and Aaron are doing is not unique. So verse number 8. Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, plead with this Yahweh, this he who is, to take away the frogs from me and from my people. And then I'll let the people go to sacrifice to he who is. So he makes a deal. He says, if you'll just make these things go away, I'll let your people go to do their little three-day out, three-day back thing. Verse 9, Moses said to Pharaoh, be pleased to command me when I am to plead for you and for your servants and for your people that the frogs be cut off from you and your houses and be left only in the Nile. And then he surprises me with this next part, verse 10. And he said, tomorrow. And I'm like, what? Why didn't he say, right now, I want them to go away now? But instead he says, I want them gone tomorrow. I have no clue what was going through his head at that moment. But Moses said, be it as you say, so that you may know that there is no one like he who is our God. So you said tomorrow, that's when it's going to happen. The frogs shall go away from you and your houses and the servants and your people, and they shall be left only in the Nile. And so Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh. Moses cried to he who is about the frogs as he had agreed with Pharaoh. And he who is did according to the word of Moses. So now we're at tomorrow morning, assuming tomorrow morning. And Moses goes out, offers the prayer, and instantly, Pharaoh gets what he asked for, and that is, the frogs are no longer hopping all over the place. No, they're dead, just like the fish. So the frogs died out in the houses, the courtyards, and the fields. So God didn't just make them hop away. He just let them, you'll have to excuse me, let them croak where they were. Yeah, I couldn't resist. And just start stinking. just like the fish, as a reminder of there are consequences to refusing to comply with what God says. So the Egyptians, perhaps the Israelis at the Egyptian command, because there are slaves after all, they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank. So it's been a very stinky period in these first two plagues. Verse 15, but when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, meaning the plague is over, he hardened his heart and would not listen to them as he who is had said. So plague number two is in the books. It's gone. It's over. And Pharaoh is like, well, I'm glad that's done. No, you can't leave. And so now we will set up for plague number three, starting in verse 16. Then he who is said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand and strike the dust of the earth so that it may become gnats in all the land of Egypt. Now, these gnats, I don't think are those little tiny flies that we get from banana peels that are quite irritating. I think it's possible they are either lice or maybe mosquitoes. They are something that is going to bug the Egyptians, not just simply be kind of a mild annoyance. And remember, the Egyptians seem to shave off body hair to avoid little insects coming and living on their bodies. So if these are lice, then this is really going to be a big deal against them. But we have run out of time today, so mark your place, and I'll see you next time we get into the Word.